It's amazing, isn't it?
I can't remember when I had such a good time.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 19, The Young Men and the Sea. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Before I get into today's episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Patreon because we had a lot of feedback for our last episode about Greek. And I wanted to share it first. We had a comment from, since she didn't agree to have this shared on the main podcast, I won't dox her. I'll just say this is from Michelle M., who commented, "Never watched Greek, but 1 minute into your intro, I thought it must be strongly based on my alma mater, where effing Paul Ryan also matriculated." So I looked it up. That would be Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. And yes, it surely was. Spencer Grammer is excellent on Rick and Morty, and it would be great to see her in more live-action things. I agree. I really like her in this. I feel like we kind of let her down. She never really had the career that I thought she should have after this, because I thought she had a really nice presence on screen. Also, sidebar, after we recorded that episode, she was fucking involved in a slashing in New York. Like, there was an altercation at a bar. Where someone, I think, was either not social distancing or not wearing a mask or probably both. And she got involved to try and defuse the situation. And the person had a knife and stabbed her friend and she got, like, slashed in the process. She's fine. But yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big yikes. Also, just wear masks, everyone.
Honestly, it's not that big a deal.
No. I don't think you need to... you know, have knives out for that, frankly.
No. Indeed. And speaking of our Patreon, we realized that we are going to have 3 Patreon episodes dropping between now and when our book comes out, a very special 90210 book, which is in stores on September 22nd. You can pre-order it now, as we've been telling you for a while. And so in honor of that momentous occasion, we realized there were 3 original teen cast members from the show that we still hadn't done a let's watch on. And so we're going to be rectifying that in the next 3 Patreon episodes, starting with Again With This, number 16, dropping August 21st. And we're going to be talking about Girls Just Want to Have Fun, the feature film. Starring Sarah Jessica Parker and Helen Hunt and co-starring a teeny tiny 14-year-old Shannon Doherty. Actually, I think she was only 13 when she made it.
She's so cute in this. It's amazing.
Yes. So it is streaming for subscribers on Hulu and Prime. If you have either of those, it's on both. It's also available to rent or buy at Amazon, iTunes, or Google Play. And just a note about Hulu and Prime, if you are friends with any people who are also Patreon subscribers or just want to watch this movie and get on board, Amazon and Hulu both let you do a watch party. So if you wanted to, like, watch it together and do a hangout, you can. We haven't tried this yet, but we've been talking about figuring out how to maybe integrate this into the podcast. So stay tuned for that as well. So if you want to hear us talk about Girls Just Want to Have Fun on August 21st, you can join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any levels of support gets you access to all of the back episodes of the podcast and all of the ones going forward. So that's what's up with that. Shall we talk about this episode?
Yes, we shall.
All right. Let us start with our D plot. Jeffrey considers telling. Matt is having breakfast with Jeffrey at his place, where Jeffrey is regaling him with how great Navy life is and the amazing opportunities it has afforded him, blah, blah, blah. Matt, curiously, not combatively, asks if the Navy is awesome even if gay men aren't allowed to serve openly, are restricted in duty, or passed over for preferential assignments, etc. Jeffrey defensively repeats the official line, which is that the military can't ask his sexual orientation. No one has prevented him from doing anything he wants to do. And Matt's like, okay, geez. Jeffrey calms down and asks Matt for dinner that night after a lecture that he has at the Naval Academy. And after Matt accepts, he can't help asking another question, which is how Jeffrey keeps the two halves of his life so separate. Apparently, it's that Jeffrey keeps his relationships simple and short, and Matt's face is like, cool, got it. Just a bummer.
Yeah.
So that night, Matt and his giant jacket have decided to be cute and meet Jeffrey after his lecture, but it does not go the way he had probably hoped. Clip two.
Hey, sailor. Can I buy you a beer?
Matt, what are you doing here? I thought we were going to meet at the restaurant.
I couldn't wait. I can't stop thinking about you.
Ensigns, Paul Martin, Steve Green, Seth Adrian, Adam Joshua, Joe Wallace, Matt Fielding.
Hey, Matt.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Matt and I went to high school together. We just ran into each other yesterday in Santa Monica. I hadn't seen each other in 10 years.
Jeffrey. Ooh.
I mean, yeah.
It's such a bummer because Hey Sailor is so cute.
I mean, but also, Matt.
I mean, yes.
I know, but Matt.
Yeah, so after Jeffrey has gotten rid of all these ensigns, the predictable fight ensues in clip three.
What the hell are you thinking coming here?
Look, I wouldn't have come if I knew you were working. You said that you had a lecture, not a common translation for work.
The military can't investigate you without evidence of public displays of homosexual orientation. Now, what are you trying to do? Give them evidence?
Look, Jeffrey, I don't walk around with a sign around my neck, okay? You're paranoid. What did I do?
Just forget it. And just stay the hell away from me.
If that's the way you want to live your life, fine. Live it.
Ooh.
I mean, I see both sides. Like, you know, Jeffrey has chosen to be closeted and Matt has chosen to date a closeted man. So it's like, it's not great for Matt, but, you know, you don't have to keep dating him. Like, if you don't want to be in the closet, you don't have to be.
Yeah. And also, you know, like, don't ask, don't tell. I think everybody's issues with it were completely valid. But part of the problem was it was such a specious little fig leaf that mm-hmm. it's like, you cannot be so naive
right.
as to think that you can show up at something and see him in uniform and then be like, hey, sailor, like, dude, don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I didn't think it was work. He said it was a lecture at the Naval Academy. Like,
yeah.
What did you think that it was about? You know,
sounds like work to me.
Right. So later, Jeffrey comes to find Matt at his office the next day and apologizes. Matt is somewhat justifiably salty and basically says it took him long enough to come out that he doesn't want to deal with anyone else's demons. Jeffrey says he is not asking Matt to do that. It's a pleasure for him to spend time with someone who's so comfortable in his own skin. And he wants to be with Matt. He wants to work on integrating both sides of his life. And Matt wants to know, what about simple and short? Well, it's all Jeffrey knows because he never met anyone who made him think of what he was missing. He needs Matt's help on this one. Matt is willing to give it a try and see how it goes. And he offers his hand to shake. But Jeffrey boldly goes in for a hug.
Guys, this aired at 9 o'clock on a network. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah got a clip, a picture of this for the visual aids where it's like, all of this is just for a hug, which is like, yes. But to be fair, Matt or Doug Savant does this thing where he's like grabs the back of Jeffrey's hair. And we see his eyes over his shoulder, and it is kind of sexy. I do appreciate the ways that Savant seems to be finding to sneak in even very soft core eroticism into these weird moments. Like he is trying to like,
yeah,
you know, wedge it in.
I mean, it's certainly not the actor's fault. And like, it's easy to make fun of now. And frankly, yeah, we made fun of it then that it was like, handshake.
Yeah.
But, you know, the society was making choices for people.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I think they're both really trying to kind of get around the spelling code
mm-hmm.
as best they can. And they do have chemistry. It's really a pity. You know, you kind of want them to just like reshoot these scenes because both these actors still look good. They're still in.
Yeah. It's almost 20 years later and they're both keeping it real nice and tight.
Yep. So it's like, let's just reenact, like, how should this have gone? Because, you know, I never felt like Doug Savant was, you know, trying to get out of doing anything. Not like some people I could mention, Kurtzman.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yes, I agree. Anyway, that's where we leave them for now. So let's move on to our C plot. Billy ponders moving Allison eastward. That is a joke for four people who know about Allison Eastwood, Clint Eastwood's daughter. Jake is on his way out to another storyline, which we will get to, when Billy female gazefully pops out of the pool for no reason to tell him his big promotion news. Jake is happy for him, of course, but Billy gets to the point. He doesn't know how to tell Allison the news. She loves L.A. and is killing it at her job, so he doesn't know how to ask her to go with him. How about, for starters, you guys just got back together at Christmas, and it is currently Groundhog Day, so the idea that she would uproot her life for you is absurd? Like, come on? But
yeah,
Jake, king of healthy relationships, has all the answers in clip four.
Well, it seems pretty cut and dry to me.
Well, unless she says no.
If she's committed to the relationship, she'll go. If the situation was reversed, you'd go. Tell her that.
Well, it'd be nice if it was that simple.
It is, if you make it that way.
Okay.
It's a cross-country move, brew.
Yeah. Also, I don't think it is true that if the situation were reversed, Billy would go, actually.
No.
But fine.
No, it's not. I mean, some of this is needlessly complicated for television soap opera reasons, but mm-hmm. I don't think that Jake needs to hang a lantern on the ways in which it is.
Yeah.
By saying that it isn't.
Right. But Billy thinks that Jake is a genius. So when Allison gets home that night, he has covered the coffee table in New Yorkery, which includes a New York cheesecake, the movies Manhattan and New York, New York. What I think we're supposed to believe is New York-style pizza, but which looks fucking terrible, and you can see that in the visual aids. A large apple on a plate. Well, there's a cassette out of Frank Sinatra singing New York, New York. This is what we hear, clip five.
I got some shoes that you get me around without wheels. Women on top make no deal, sister. Inches of sharp driving blades straight through. I got spike heels. So
one of the worst sub music choices ever.
Yeah, it's not good.
Anyway,
I think it's like the there was the D'Agostino ads from my childhood. Love that D'Agostino. And this sounds like the, you know, there's the whole part of the Cheers theme that you don't hear that was like a number 11 single or something like that. It's like that, but for the D'Agostino ads, that's what we heard. I would not be surprised.
That
listeners,
be.
If you have any information on this bit of trivia, let me know, but don't go back and listen to the clip.
D'Agostino's, their aisles are 3 feet wide.
It's true, they are. So Allison is annoying, but she is not dumb. So she puts together what all of these items have in common. Clip six.
What do I get for the right answer?
An all expenses paid trip.
I'm liking this game more by the second.
Allison, I got promoted. Junior editor, Escapade Magazine, New York City. And they want me to be there Monday, and I want you to move there with me.
Love those veggies. Love that meat. Enough of this lovemaking. What do you say we eat? Let me just make the first of myriad objections to the entire story structure of this junior editor cross-country promotion, which
Please.
Ends, as we'll see later, in a gigantic office with huge windows.
That's in the next episode, and I'm going to be mad about it for the rest of
my
life, frankly.
I'm pre-infuriated, so everybody just get ready.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I
that's it.
All right. The long pause was Allison's face falling, of course, as before her throat made that little click noise. Because, yes, of course, she failed Jake's big test. So the office the next day, Amanda presumptuously congratulates Allison on her move to New York. Jake told her about Billy's promotion. Allison guardedly comments on news traveling fast. Amanda thinks it's great. Allison will come back thinking differently, dressing differently, we can only hope. Allison interrupts to say she's not even sure she's going. Amanda thinks she's crazy to think Billy should go without her. True love, if that's what it is a rare thing, and Allison can't let it slip through her fingers. So that's a lot of assumptions, by the way. Yep. That night, Allison has apparently taken Amanda's fingers advice to heart and ended their dinner with a chocolate mousse cake topped with lady fingers. I see you, prop department. Billy asks her to quit tap dancing and talk about New York, then glares idiotically until she comes out and says what we all knew she would. Clip 7.
Billy, I can't move to New York.
Oh, there it is. Terrific.
I'm not saying I won't change my mind. It's just... it doesn't make any sense for me to leave right now.
It makes sense if you wanted to.
Look, your career is important, and so is mine. If things keep going the way they have been, I'll be promoted by the end of the year. I'd be crazy to leave now. There's just nothing comparable in New York.
You don't know that. We're not talking about Kansas. We're talking about the biggest advertising city, if not the biggest, in the world.
What if you hate New York?
What if I like it?
We can have a successful long-distance relationship. Other people have done it.
I don't care about other people.
Billy, Escapade gave you a week to pack everything and go. They could give you a week to pack everything and come back. What do we do then? I think we should be conservative. Initially, you should go without me, and we'll take it from there.
I would love to think that we can make it through this. And I want what's best for you and your career. But no matter how open-minded I try to be, I keep coming back to the same thing. I just don't think it's a good idea for us to be 3,000 miles apart.
I mean, I feel like she should have started with, they gave you a week to pack up and they could give you a week to come back. Because that's a great point. Like, that's not a stable working situation because... there's nothing comparable for me in New York in the field of advertising. It's not accurate.
Yeah, no. I mean, we all know Mad Men took place in Philadelphia, but that was an outlier. Jesus.
Yes. Fucking famously Allison. In Philadelphia with their satellite office in Detroit, but yes. Anyway.
Yikes. I mean, the other thing is, like, there's so many things about this argument. I get that it's TV, so they have to, like, root it in the emotional, like, disconnect.
Right.
Between how they're thinking of this. But the fact is, New York to LA moves, like, they happen. Mm-hmm. New York is sort of a, you know, singular place to try to find real estate. I just, like, you would lead with the logistics of this. Like, oh, right. Did they give you enough relo money for both of us? No? Then we're doing this long distance. Yeah. End of conversation.
Right.
I don't care if you're married already. Mm-hmm. So the other thing is, y'all couldn't make it work when you were 3 meters apart because Steve, who you should have boned, I'm not letting that go.
And because of Keith before him, like, this is relationship has not been trouble-free when you've been in very close proximity.
Yeah. So. Also, you know, he fell on Amanda's vagina, unbeknownst to you, but still, like, maybe he's in a big hurry to get you both out of LA for a reason. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
But truly, like, I did look up, they got back together on Christmas, we know, because we saw it in that episode, but like, this episode did air on Groundhog Day, so it's been 6 weeks. Like,
yeah,
that's not long enough.
Here's one more objection. She's killing it at her job since when?
Yeah, right.
No? Okay.
Yeah, she snaked one client and barely is maybe hanging on to it for all we know.
And only because Amanda sort of let her get away with it this once, because Amanda was distracted. Ugh.
Because Amanda was literally on a plane. So, yeah. Anyway, the next night, as Billy packs, Allison walks in with a whole logistical plan for how they're going to make their long-distance relationship work. Who's going to go where, when, and for the least money. She's even going to get a fax modem for her portable computer. Oh, that takes me back. I mean, I guess she got the one fixed that he hurled against a wall or replaced it.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Anyway, Billy is not so psyched. Clip 8.
Allison, stop, okay?
What?
Airline tickets and logistics are not the issue. On paper, we can make anything work.
I'm just trying to look at the situation practically.
Yeah, that's the problem. We have to look at it emotionally. I mean, that's the barometer for making this decision.
No, it isn't.
You know how most long-distance relationships turn out. I mean, there's going to be Keiths and Steves around every corner, and people drift apart.
Not if they're committed to making it work.
Well, maybe we define that differently. I think if you come with me, then you're committed. If that's not the case, then what are we dating for? Why are we even talking?
You think you're making this simple, but you're the one who's complicating things. A long-distance relationship will work if you want it to.
You are glossing over everything. I don't know what it's going to take to convince you.
Time! Please give us that.
I can't. That's the one thing I don't have.
I don't understand what is being discussed. Like, are you saying if he goes, you're breaking up? Like, you're going to have time either way. So you're either going to figure it out or you're not. This is dumb.
Yeah. I mean, like, you don't have time to stick around L.A. and talk about it in person,
right.
But you actually have plenty of time. Those flights are long. Write a letter. Make a pros and cons list.
Yeah. Ugh. Get on the plane phone. We just saw. It's a credit card.
Swipe your Diners Club card.
Does Billy have a credit card yet? We know he didn't before. Allison only had one for emergencies. Anyway. The next day in the laundry room, Allison bitches to Joe that Billy wouldn't let her throw him a going away party. She is confident that long distance can work. She just needs to convince Billy. Joe thinks he'll come around when he sees how happy she is when they're together. If they are together ever, like, that's the question. He would have to come back or she would have to go there for them to see it. Whatever. But thanks, Joe. Whatever. Joe's got her own problems. We'll get to them. Then it's time for Billy to go to the airport, and Allison is whining, of course, that he's not letting her take him. He admits he's afraid he won't go if she's there. She's already got her first ticket to come visit him. By the time he's found the best takeout place in his neighborhood, she'll be there, which is actually, I thought that was kind of a sweet way to phrase it. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wishes he shared her attitude, he says, but at least he's smiling. She tells him it's one of the most romantic cities in the world, so he just needs to think about all the things they're going to do there together. And then the cab horn honks, so he has to go, and they hug and kiss. She'll talk to him in 6 hours, and he stops in the walkway with his suitcase, and with all the emotion of the moment, he says, clip 9.
See ya.
I mean, it is possible, I guess, to have less emotion behind even that flip a valedictory, but he's just like, say,
yeah.
Are you drunk?
Maybe he is. It's a long flight. It's
maybe.
A red eye.
Sure, why not?
Just wants to sleep. Anyway, that's where we leave these two idiots for now. Moving on to other idiots. In our B plot, Michael's life continues falling apart, now with more pills. Michael wakes up alone at the beach house, taps a couple of painkillers out of a bottle with a hand-typed label.
Oh.
Washes them down with beer. You can see a picture of this in the visual aids, and it sent me in such a reverie. Do you ever, when you're watching things that are from the past, even the, like, not that long ago past, and just think, like, how many jobs don't exist anymore that are represented in it, because it's all I can think about.
Yeah, sometimes. I especially thought in this one of I tend to focus on, like, vintage office supplies. I mean, I do kind of miss, like, a big heavy handset phone with a literal bell in it at times, and, like, punchy buttons that make a sound.
Yeah.
But I also was thinking about whoever typed that label and then maybe had to, like, hand moisten it with a little sponge and put it on the bottle. And then it was like, oh my God, like so many people touched so many things. And like, we just live in a world where, I don't know, like even the hugging with Jeffrey and Matt is like, I wouldn't even do that right now. Guys, put your masks on, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. I was more thinking economically, although it's all related.
Oh, but no,
yeah,
I know.
When we were watching Mindhunter, and this was only like last Thanksgiving, every time they would go to, you know, a different little town, wherever they were, like a prison town, everywhere they were, I was just think like even a medium-sized city in the 70s would have like three newspapers, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Just so... such a different world. Anyway, did we mention our Patreon? Patreon.com/againwiththis. Moving on. Speaking of the phone, it's the past. So Michael has to carry the corded phone and cradle over to the kitchen peninsula to call Jane and slur her morning wake-up call into her machine, offering to come by for breakfast. She makes the mistake of letting him know she's paying attention by picking up to tell him she's going to get a restraining order if he doesn't stop. He doesn't know why she'd want to restrain someone who only wants the best for her. And if she doesn't agree to talk to him, he's going to go to her office and make a scene. She tells him to stay away from her and get some help, apparently not believing he's going to go to the trouble of figuring out the bus schedule to get all the way down to the beach to bother her. And then there's a knock on the door. It's Sydney, and she's got a bowl of fruit. It's like not explained. I guess this is the pretext for why she's coming by first thing in the morning, but it's very weird.
Yeah.
Anyway. She also has some excellent pajamas on. Did you want to describe them?
I mean, I don't actually remember what they have on them. Is it dogs?
Yeah, it's little dogs.
But they're just like very crisp, white, men-styled pajamas, and they look really cute. And it's such a welcome relief from the flimsy peignoir that you usually see on TV and only on TV that I just had to note them. They're in the visual aids.
Yeah, they're real cute. Sydney can tell that Jane is upset. Jane explains why. Sydney doesn't know why Jane is even waiting to get a restraining order, though she also victim blames that Jane is letting Michael do this to her. But Jane agrees that Sydney's right and decides to go to the courthouse before work to get it done. Not sure that's how it works, but okay. Sydney volunteers to go with her, but Jane says it won't be hard to do. She's recorded all of Michael's calls, but Sydney has her own stories to back Jane up and also wants to offer moral support. So Jane relents. An unshaven Michael is at the hospital when a uniformed sheriff finds him and hands him Jane's restraining order. That was suspiciously fast, but, you know, it's TV.
Yeah.
Michael is still so high that he reads it out loud and starts sarcastically laughing about it to a nearby nurse who is just trying to work and in no mood. And he puts his arm around her, looks like she might also like to take out a restraining order against him, but she just sort of sidles away. This is the visual aids as well. So after diming up Michael to Jane and making sure that Jane got a restraining order against him, Sydney just goes ahead to the beach house with two big bags of groceries, playing the long game as usual. The place is a sty, an alarm going off in the bedroom and Michael totally asleep right next to it. But instead of being concerned, she leans in next to his face and coos that it's almost noon. What's he doing at home? He claims he's sick, but declines her offer to get him a doctor. So she turns on the shower for him. Apparently, she got in using a spare key that she once saw him leave in a lamp outside. He squints at her, looking like hell. And there's a picture of this in the visual aids as well. And the worst was that even looking like this, I was like, God, I still would, even at this point. I am the worst.
I mean, you lost me like two haircuts ago, but more for you.
Yeah, well, fine. So when Michael goes to the bathroom, Sydney starts making the bed, finding an empty pill bottle in the sheets and a full one folded in the comforter. She immediately goes in to confront him about it, and he grabs that he needs the painkillers for his back because the hospital expects him to be on his feet for 20-hour shifts. When she says she's sorry, he tells her he doesn't want her cleaning his house or bringing handouts. He just wants everyone out of his way so he can get back together with Jane. Cut to Jane's apartment door that night where Michael is violating the restraining order, yelling through it to try to get her to come talk to him. Inside, Jane calls the cops, complaining that no one's there since she already called 15 minutes ago to say he was on his way. Just a reminder, cops don't stop crime. They show up afterwards to make you feel dumb. But anyway, when Michael starts kicking the door, Sydney comes out of her place to bring him upstairs so he doesn't get arrested, barely ahead of the cops. And Jane is furious when she comes out to see the cops are there that Michael has also apparently evaporated. And the next night, Sydney waits in a car. Again, whose car? It was never established Sydney had a car. Why do I care? She's outside the hospital waiting for a sweaty Michael, still in his lab coat, to come out. After kissing her kind of perfunctorily, he gives her a prescription to fill at the hospital pharmacy. She actually looks at it to see it's for painkillers and is made out to her. And he confirms that they're actually for him, but that he obviously can't make it out to himself. And this is a bridge too far, even for Sydney. Clip 10.
I don't know, Michael.
Come on, Sid.
Oh, really? I don't think you should be taking these. I mean, aren't they bad for you?
What?
Well, if it was okay for you to be taking them, then wouldn't another doctor give you a prescription?
What, are you God now? You want to tell me I'm in pain or not? Or maybe you enjoy watching me suffer. Maybe that's it.
Michael, I just thought maybe you should see a doctor.
Look, I am a doctor, damn it. Now, look, you get that prescription filled or you get out of my life.
Oh, both of you.
Yeah. So she does, and then goes back to the very messy beach house the next night because the hospital told her that Michael didn't go in again. She finds him passed out on the bathroom floor with the water running and calls 911 when she can't wake him up. So not good for Michael or her, frankly, but that's where we leave the two of them.
Mm.
As we move on to our A plot, Reed gets his boat scam off the ground. Get it?
I do.
Thank you.
You're
joke. Joe goes to meet Reed at the marina, finding him in a mood because the engine won't turn over. They'll have to go to Catalina Island another time. He also had the boat booked for a harbor cruise the next night, so that's off too because he doesn't have the money to fix it. Wouldn't the boat's owner want to fix its engine at some point? Because that's not him. This is the freaking Peach Pad After Dark under Noah and Dylan's management all over again with, like, who is in charge of what? This is so frustrating, but whatever.
Yeah. And it's like, it's one thing to sort of obscure from us up until a certain point what Reed, how Reed is sketchy, but like,
yes.
find a different way to do it. And in the next episode, it's even worse. Like,
yeah.
Make basic decisions about who knows what about boats and write them down so you don't forget them.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Anyway, Joe says she may know someone who could fix the engine for free. And of course, it is Jake. And when we see Reed next, he's in the guts of the boat with Jake, who's just fixed the engine and is asking naught but a beer for his troubles. In the galley or whatever, Reed proposes that Jake come in with him 60-40 on whatever the hell this business is. Jake seems dubious, which makes sense since the last time he and Reed interacted, it was because he was pretty sure that Reed was a con artist, which, by the way, as we know, he was right. But Jake says he will think about it. In the meantime, Reed invites Jake to come on the harbor cruise. He'll give Jake 40% of the booking as payback for his work that day. Jake can bring Amanda, see the harbor lights, free booze, free food, etc. Jake asks how Reed could book a harbor cruise without a mechanic, which Reed laughs off by saying he has brass balls, and somehow this convinces Jake. And the next morning, Joe wakes up on the boat in a great mood. Smelling the coffee wafting through the porthole makes her feel like she's on vacation, but she actually has a lot of errands to do that she's been putting off. And he asks if she's going back to her apartment first because he has one suitcase full of valuables he wouldn't mind her keeping at her place if it's not too much trouble. Like, presumably she could lock it in the trunk of her car, but whatever, she agrees to store the suitcase for him. And then it's time for the harbor cruise. Jake has brought Amanda, who's having a hell of a time, considering the last time she interacted with Reed, she also thought he was sketchy as hell. Even Joe's reflexive shade against Amanda can't dampen Amanda's party mood, and she pulls Jake away to dance. Reed tells Joe he dreamed about this, running a charter business to the Caribbean, arms around the woman he loves. Joe then announces that she wants to give him half the collateral he needs to buy the boat. She's thought a lot about it and wants to do it with him. She leaves and he creepily gazes out at the horizon, silently congratulating himself on a grift well done. And you have to see this picture. It's so good.
Oh, my God.
Obviously, it's in the visual aids. He then gives his first mate or whatever the wheel so he can go stand creepily close behind Amanda again. Sounds like she's also just about to offer to front him to buy the boat when he tells her that Joe is going to. And instead of being glad she's off the hook and gets to keep her money, Amanda decides to talk some shit. Clip 11.
Oh. Well, the last time she invested in a business with a man she was romantically involved with, burned to the ground. I wouldn't be investing because I have a compulsion to buy boyfriends. I smell a good deal, and I'm not gonna run when things stop working in the bedroom.
Well, why don't you tell me how you really feel?
Besides, I'd be a silent partner. I'm not interested in trying to run things I know nothing about.
I'll think about it. I'll let you know.
If I were you, I'd give me an answer now, before the vodka wears off.
Okay, well, the answer is, yes.
Good. What a racket. Practically runs itself.
Bitch, you burned that business to the ground, as I recall. Yeah. So,
yeah, you did.
Wow, that's really rude.
Yeah. I mean, what a bitch. Also, have you been around boats your whole life or not? If you don't know anything about it, why are you investing?
Yeah.
If it's such a racket, why don't you just buy your own boat and let Jake... Okay, you know what?
Yeah.
None of this is the point. Let's just get to the drugs.
And again, as I said, like, it was established early on in Amanda's time on the show that her dad has a boat, because we saw her at the marina, like, sailing away on it.
Yeah.
Like, where is her dad? Is her dad in his boat? Like, why aren't they just using her dad's boat?
That was probably seized by the government, but whatever.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess. But, and even so, that should be a plot point. Like, it should be a line of dialogue where it's like, here's how I know, because my dad's boat.
No, absolutely.
The feds have now. Blah, blah, blah.
But I think they just forgot that part.
Oh, I'm sure.
So now we're all here at sea.
Oh, I see what you did.
Sorry. Not sorry.
No, you're not.
I'm not, nor should I be.
Nah, you shouldn't be either. So apparently Amanda told Jake the big news on the car ride home, because they're in the middle of fighting about it as they walk into the courtyard. Now the deal is that Amanda would be an equal partner with Joe and Reed, so both broads are buying in. Also, I guess showing up for the harbor cruise did not necessarily mean that Jake was accepting Reed's partnership offer, because he's back to being suspicious in clip 12.
A guy who doesn't know half what he sounds like he knows about boats.
Well, he talks a pretty good game.
Yeah, he's got a good line. Doesn't know anything about maintenance.
So he doesn't know engines. He has you, and he's done this before.
Amanda, you're missing the point.
And what point am I missing, Jake? That you're trying to keep an eye on Reed to protect Joe?
That's ridiculous.
Oh.
You were so dead set against this guy. I don't understand you. Now's what, you suddenly trust him?
I thought he was a con artist, and now I don't. Besides, I'm not assuming all the risk. I know you're there to try and protect Joe's investment. And now you can protect mine, too.
Yeah, he's done this before, and look how that turned out. Not only is he a con artist, he sucks at it.
Yeah. I don't know if they know that he served time, though, because that doesn't seem like something Joe would have told them.
Yeah, but...
Also, I thought he was a con artist, and now I don't, is such a great line of soap opera dialogue where it's like, we're not doing that anymore. Like, we have moved on. Don't talk about it.
Also, like, of all characters to put that line of dialogue.
I know.
Like, she almost sells it, but, like, her? Come on, guys.
I know.
Jesus.
Yeah. Anyway, the next morning, Allison is at Joe's again for one of their famous pre-work breakfasts. Joe has put the suitcase on her kitchen table as she tells Allison how much she wants to open it because she's convinced there's drugs in it. Allison notes that Reed did serve time for drug trafficking, so this is not a completely outlandish thing for Joe to suspect, but Joe is spinning out clip 13.
But maybe it's not doubt, you know? I mean, maybe I'm really starting to feel for him, and I'm just looking for an excuse to run, to get rid of this anxiety.
The anxiety of another romance, or the anxiety of going into business with him?
What makes you ask that? I mean, just because I keep replaying over in my head Jake's voice going, I can't believe you're getting into business with an ex-con.
Okay, let's go over this again. All right, the suitcase is here to keep it safe from the people on the boat?
Yes. And I mean, if I had something, one thing that I really cared about, I would want it safe too. Right. So why was I up at 6 a.m. circling this thing like an animal with its prey? Because I'm insane, that's why.
Your instincts are right.
I gotta know what's in it.
So she goes and gets a knife and pries off one of the clasps, which is locked, and finds it full of, like, clothes and a lamp. Obvious, very obvious trap.
Like, yeah. And there were some pictures in there, like he said there were, but it's like, you could tell, like, if you've ever lifted a suitcase before, like, you don't really need to know that much about drugs and what they weigh to know that drugs are not in there.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing heavy that could be drugs. Like, there's not even, like, a dictionary or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, if he wanted her to suspect that it was drugs and make her look like there would be, you know, the complete works of William Shakespeare or something to at least approximate the weight, you know.
And if you either think he's testing you or think he gave you drugs, like, either way, you don't actually have to open the suitcase to know that you should not be in this relationship.
Exactly. Yes.
But soap opera. So on we go.
Indeed. So Joe meets Reed at Shooters that night. She's in a great mood until he drops the bombshell that their new partner is joining them, and she sees Amanda walking in with Jake. Obviously, Joe is upset. Reed tells her he'll explain later. Joe tries to keep her loathing to herself, but neither she nor Jake has a poker face at all, which you can see in a GIF I made, particularly after Amanda launches into her business plan in clip 14.
Now, this is what I'm thinking. You were absolutely right about the day trips, the parties, weddings, whale watching, cash in advance, clients supply their own catering. But I think we should do a no-host bar. We can put the application for the liquor license under my name.
Amanda, maybe you should wait a little bit.
You could put it under Joe's name.
You have everything figured out, don't you?
Actually, there are still plenty of unknowns.
Yeah, there are, actually.
Yeah. Which is why you're forging ahead with, like, oh my God, like, the insurance alone. I can't even.
Also, I don't know if you need, do you need a liquor license if it's going to be like a no host bar? Like, if it's not a cash bar, do you need a liquor license?
And if they're doing their own catering, just have them bring their own booze. At which point it's kind of like, then what do you even need Reed and Jake for? Like,
right.
If you're going to go to all that trouble, just buy your own crappy boat or go to a bar. I don't know. Boats. What a boondoggle.
Ugh, what a waste. My God, I do not understand who would want to buy a boat.
I don't either.
No offense, boat people. After the big summit, Reed is pretending he didn't know how much Joe hated Amanda before getting them all in business together. He didn't want Joe taking out a loan, and they needed another investor. The evil you know is better than the evil you don't, he says. Even she thinks that's logical. He agrees that he should have talked to Joe first. He's about to leave, but she wants him to stay. He remembers that he had something he wanted to give her in his suitcase, and then her face falls. He tells her to go get it, and as she does, he creepily watches, knowing that she totally fell for his trap. She carefully brings out the broken suitcase, and he flips into high dudgeon about how he's supposed to trust her after this and blah, 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 while she cowers and says he had to know that she would be curious, and then he gets mad that she put it back on him. Is he ever going to get out of jail? He stomps over to the door with the suitcase, yelling that he'll get her check back to her in the morning. Oh, Joe.
Yeah.
Walked right into this one.
Yeah. But
so the next day,
you're getting your money back, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Hold your breath. The next day, Joe has to admit to Allison that Reed found out about her busting into his suitcase, and now she's on the outs of the big boat partnership. She has to apologize so that he knows she truly is remorseful and doesn't think of him as an ex-con. She needs this to work. So cut to the boat where Reed is on the phone doubling his order, probably not of crazy bread, but then he sees Joe approaching and quickly hangs up. Wasn't expecting to see her, but she had something she wanted to say in person. Intensely, but also rolling her eyes, she apologizes for making pay for the disappointments of her past relationships. Her opening his suitcase wasn't about him, it was about her fear of letting him in. Maybe he was taking out her frustrations about people's prejudices against her, and they hug, and he tells her he needs her, and yeah, I bet he does, and that's where we leave. Poor Joe. Oh, Joe.
Oh, Joe.
let us close things up by naming our episode MVP.
Reed. I mean, boyfriend is getting by with it big time. I don't get it, but it's working.
He's keeping it soapy. I mean, I'll give him that. Like, he's...
Yeah.
If snowing Amanda, who's like the most street smart character on the show, that's not nothing.
Yeah. And the driving the boat glowering Hall of Fame. Unbelievable. He knitted his brows so hard. It was a blanket. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. I'm going to give it to... God, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm going to give it to Allison because she is at least for once sensible enough to not drop everything and go somewhere with a guy, because she did it for Keith and it was a mistake.
Yeah.
She's right to not want to go to New York with Billy at this juncture, although, you know, not for all of the reasons that she said, but it's sensible to like see how things go before she commits to, you know, moving across the country, which is a big hassle. I can tell you from experience.
Yeah.
Least valuable player. Michael.
Yeah.
Leave Jane alone.
And also patient zero of the opioid crisis, apparently. Well done. That's a valid choice. I am going to go with Joe, girl. Mm-hmm. Honey.
Yeah, use your head.
Yeah, not that one. Other one. Oh, thank you. It wasn't as good as Crazy Bread, but I'll take it. Next time on Again with This Crazy Bread, nobody asked, but Matt guilted Jeffrey into telling, and now they're both screwed, but not on screen. Sydney gathers intel that could screw Michael over, and Reed's got a screw loose. Spoiler. You should unscrew the cap on a bottle of Rolaids before visiting our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website. That's at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you could pre-order a very special Beverly Hills 90210 book. And why not follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you the extra content we were talking about before. I am new Eork mood, Sarah D. Bunting, sorry not sorry, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Schrodinger Suitcase, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Big Apple, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
See ya.
I was hoping that would happen.